friends, and welcome back to the Everyday Mission Podcast. I'm Mike Potter. This is a podcast brought to you in part by Missio Alliance and features stories from everyday people who are taking steps toward living missional lives. Your host is Gina Mueller, the director of 3DM North America. The mission of 3DM is to invest in and raise up leaders who empower everyday people to do the things that Jesus did. You can find out more at our website at 3dmovements.com. Well, this podcast is just over a year old, and one of our most popular episodes so far was a discussion Gina had about living on mission in a small town setting. So we decided to do another episode today on mission in a small town, but this time with pastor and professor Jason McConnell. And if there was ever a guy to talk about this topic, it's Jason. He has a BA in pastoral ministry from Moody Bible Institute, an MDiv and a THM from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. And get this, he has a DMin in rural ministry from Beeson Divinity School. And Jason is a small town resident and a missional practitioner there as he pastors two small churches, one in his small town and one outside of it in the countryside. This guy just smells of small town. I mean, I've never personally smelled him. And I mean this in the most positive of ways. I think you know what I mean. So without further delay, here is Gina with Jason McConnell and On Mission in a Small Town, Part 2.
I'm so excited to have Jason McConnell with me today. Jason is a pastor in Northern Vermont and also a professor at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary here in New England, and has lots to say about small town living and what living intentionally in a small town, investing in a small town looks like. So Jason, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here with you.
Do a little bit of an introduction. Tell us a bit more about who you are, some of the like things that you're doing, some of the leadership spaces that you're leading in, and maybe unpack a little bit more about the context where you live.
Sure. Well, it might be a little bit helpful just to give a little bit of background on myself. First of all, I grew up in a small town, a coal mining town outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I grew up in a purely secular environment. We never attended church as a family. I didn't know anything about the Bible. Had become a full-blown alcoholic through high school. And lo and behold, by the invitation of a friend, I literally stumbled into church on a Sunday morning, and it blew me away. I heard the Bible, I heard the gospel, and ironically, I just kept on going to church, and about 6 months later, had a dramatic conversion experience. And then, interestingly, too, this happens in small towns where the pastor, this little church has done discipleship better than any church I've ever been in to this day. Never more than 40 people in this little tiny village, but they just lived out their faith. And the pastor came to me about 6 months after my conversion, and he said, "Well, you've been walking with Jesus for a while now. It's probably time for you to preach your first sermon." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know anything else. I didn't know better." And I said, "Well, okay, I guess this, if this is what you do, fine, but I don't have a clue how to do that." And he laughed and said, "Oh, don't worry, we'll mentor you in this." And so all like 8 months after my conversion, I preached my first sermon.
No way.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it was my second sermon that followed not long after that. I had this dramatic Holy Spirit calling to ministry, like, this is what you're going to do the rest of your life.
Wow.
As a senior in high school. So when I thought about ministry, it was always in a small town because my family went back in this little town in Pennsylvania generations, like into the early 1800s. And so people just don't move. They're not particularly aware of the outside world, except for what they see on television. But life is lived in this sort of small town and a very sort of parochial geographic context. And so when I thought about ministry, it was, okay, well, this is what it is. And then I went to college in Chicago and lived right downtown and experienced everything in city life. And I thought, oh, wow, this is very different. I enjoyed that, but I still always thought about being in a small town. And so anyway, after going to Gordon Conwell Seminary to do a master's degree, My wife and I honeymooned in southern Vermont, of all things, right after we got married. I had never been to Vermont, but coming directly from Chicago, I thought, oh my gosh, this place is like living in Little House on the Prairie. It was like stepping back 100 years. Every little town has its own general store, and where you can get meat and a new stovepipe for your wood stove and hardware. And I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't realize places like this still existed. And we love the outdoor nature, the mountains, the rivers, and we would go hiking and skiing and those types of things. Even when we were living outside of Boston, we would go up and spend weekends. So we were just sort of infatuated by Vermont and this small town life where everyone knows everyone and a bit of a slower pace. And so lo and behold, as I was finishing seminary, I saw a listing for an opening in Franklin, Vermont. Now, it was two churches, which I thought, oh, that's odd. And I was trying to figure out what the relationship was. And so anyway, make a long story short, I've been pastoring the Franklin United Church and East Franklin Union Church in Franklin, Vermont, which is right on the Quebec border. I see Canada from my front porch. And it's a little dairy farming community, 1,400 people, and with one church sort of in the center of the village and one 5 miles literally in the middle of a cow pasture. And I've been at it for almost 20 years now. It's hard to believe that. And so I've actually left seminary a little bit early, arrived at these churches, and have been pastoring. I knew, because I grew up in a small town, I knew a little bit about small town rural values. And, you know, people in rural areas value relationships above all else. Mm-hmm. And so I jumped in full steam and just tried to learn and get involved in the community. And it's funny now because, you know, even the title of this podcast, you know, I think I was doing missional living before I even knew what that word was.
Yeah, before that was cool, before there was like a word for it.
Yeah. And I knew in northern Vermont, it was a highly secularized, you know, typically it's number one or number two in least church states in the country. And I was always fascinated by that. And I think perhaps because of my secular upbringing, I felt like I connected with non-believers, outsiders pretty well. My biggest struggle in ministry is identifying with people who get burned out on Jesus or like backslide. And I'm like, why would you ever do that? It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, my wife helps me deal with those types of issues. But
yeah.
So anyway, I felt like I had some education. Even in my undergrad, I took a course called The Dynamics of Rural and Small Town Ministry. Huh. Little did I know that that was the most formative class I've ever taken in all of my education for what I actually do on a day-to-day and week-to-week process.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit about my background and context.
That's good. I want to dive into what specifically makes living missionally, specifically in a small town, what makes that unique? You kind of described the small town Vermont context. What do you love? What do you appreciate about small towns?
Yeah, so there's several things. The first one is there's rootedness in small towns. So even if you look from a sociological perspective, small towns, rural areas are built around extended families and generational ties. And not only in America, but this is anywhere in the world. As I've taught rural ministry to students in China and India, it was interesting to hear some of those students say, oh my gosh, you've taught me more about my village than anyone else. And here I am wondering if any of these sociological principles transfer, and lo and behold, they really do. And so anyway, I love that rootedness that comes from being in a small town. There's history, there's local culture, there's a sense of belonging there. And so if you can tap into that, which I've worked hard at doing, it is a beautiful expression of life and ministry. And so along with that rootedness comes the relationships. So the difficulty is that sometimes it can be hard to break in. But once you do, oh my, just the benefits and the beauty of having these very loyal, deep personal relationships with other human beings I find is very life-giving. And it gives you time. So in a lot of more urban and suburban contexts, ministry has to go so fast. And, you know, and people often get treated like commodities. In small towns, you can't go fast because that's not the pace that people live. And if you want to make a deep impression for the gospel, it's just going to take time. Yeah. And so someone like me who sort of values a slower pace, there have been people who are in my church now that I started praying for 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and it took 16 years for them to ever show up. Well, that's okay. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And I think by the time you actually get to the gospel, you can establish deep credibility in ways that you can't in other places. You know, I have so many relationships, not only with people in my church, but just in my community. And, you know, even though I'm the pastor and that sort of has a, you know, a certain stigma attached to it for some people, I find that they're generally willing to hang out. So I have groups of people that I go hiking with and biking and fishing and even to go out and have a beer. We have people in our homes all the time, in our home for dinner, who are not believers. And it's just living life with them. So that's some of the beauty I really appreciate.
That's really good. What do you observe makes it a bit maybe challenging to think about living missionally in a small town context?
Several things here as well. So number one, I already alluded to a bit, is it can be hard to break in. Mm. And so when there are, you know, families who have been established in one place for generations, what I find, especially coming from a more urban suburban context where community is really a felt need, it's not a felt need in small towns because everyone already has community. And so no one has to think, where am I going to spend Thanksgiving this year? Because my grandma lives up the road and all my aunts and uncles and cousins are going to be there. But if you come in from the outside, that can be a little daunting because you won't most often not automatically get invited into those large family contexts. And so it can be a little lonely if you don't work hard to tap into the community that's there. And I find that, you know, even at church on Sunday morning, you'll look out and see, you know, lots of friends who went to high school together, went to elementary school together, and they want to greet and spend time with the people that they know and love, which is great, but they're not particularly savvy about looking at or welcoming outsiders. And so that's one of the struggles that I have as a pastor is, yes, we have this beautiful tight-knit community, but how are we integrating others into this? It goes against the fabric of their values in the community. And so it's a constant struggle. So those are a couple of the challenges. Also, there's a parochial nature with small towns that, hey, we have everything we need right here. We have that general store. We don't need to go anywhere else. And so there's not a lot of value for sort of national or even global. And so this comes into effect when we talk about supporting missions or going other places, learning from other cultures. A lot of small towns are pretty ethnically homogenous. And so diversity is again, not a felt need, kind of like community. And so there's a lot of things that I think we can benefit from that, again, just go a little bit against the culture. Yeah. That can be frustrating.
Yep, absolutely. You've mentioned values a couple times. My experience is there's a particular set of values in any given, even like regionally, it's important for us to do the work of a missionary of really learning our missional context. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on the region where you live, but also there's a particular set of values, things that are really important to people, I find, who live in small towns. Can you unpack those things that you see?
Yeah, sure. These are some of the things I actually teach in a class on small town ministry. So I can even package them nice and neatly for you.
Ooh. So,
yeah, how about that? So the first one that I would highlight is what I call preservation over progress. That's a value. And so most small towns are more interested in preserving their past, maintaining things that have happened over the years than they are about progress. And so how does this affect the church? Well, change happens very slow. And again, if something is going to change, you better have a good reason for it. And so I've watched a lot of ministry people get frustrated because they come in with a more urban progress, progress, progress. We need to change this. We need to change that. And you look at a bunch of small town folk who've been there for a long time and they say, "You're not from around here, are you? And, you know, why do we need to change this? It's been working just fine." And so, yeah, preservation over progress. Another one is relationships over reality. And here's where I find that, oh my, I've watched budget decisions, not only in church, but in civic organizations, where they will go to the very end because they don't want to have to let someone go because they know that that's their livelihood. And so where other contexts, the bottom line sort of rules, here relationship is a value over the realities that you might even be facing. So again, that deeply affects the way you do ministry and missional living as well. Cyclical time over linear time. This is an interesting value. So again, in most small towns, they're tied in with some type of natural resource development, which are primarily seasonal. So if it's an agricultural community like where I'm at, you have planting and harvest. Or what I learned was that even in lobstering communities in Maine or wood harvesting, logging in Oregon or ranching in the South, seasons change and so does livelihoods along with that. So you just have to be aware of time. It's not on a long continuum like it is in the city where it's always the same. There are busy seasons and quiet seasons. And so those are values that people have. It's sort of shaped by the nature around them. I sort of knew these instinctively from growing up in a small town, but it wasn't until I actually started studying rural sociology that I thought, oh, that's why I think the way I do. And that's really what culture and values comes down to, is understanding why people cherish and do things the way that they do.
Yeah, that's really good. So if we tease out even like some, okay, these are the values. What does that mean then? If we really want to live on mission and these are the values that exist with the people that we're living in proximity to, if they really value preservation over progress, that means part of the missional work that we've got to do is if we want to be people that speak good news to our community, we need to be able to identify the history and celebrate their history.
Yes.
If that's so important, we've got to be able to actually speak good news in a way that values their story as a community, their history, all of those things. You mentioned time and the cyclical nature of if it's, you know, harvest season, that means those that are really invested in agriculture, if they're harvesting, they are not going to be available to gather. And so, you know, we talk a lot about you kind of have two choices. You can either show up to where people already are if you want to look for people of peace, or you can figure out how to invite them to where you are. Well, if there's cyclical time and they're super busy in this season, that is not the time to try to host a big gathering.
That's right.
If you're wanting to look for people of peace or whatever else. So that feels really helpful as we're contextualizing mission to a specific kind of place and what's happening there. That's really good. I also here in the small town where we live, it feels like there's lots of local business. Obviously, there's small businesses that families are really proud of. Mm-hmm. And so we found the more that we can shop super, super, super locally and invest in small local businesses, that speaks volumes to the community around us too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And local over national and global is another value in small towns. And so I think if you can tap into all of these things and leverage them, you know, I always say about time, you know, if you're in a small town, don't ever plan a men's retreat during deer season.
Yes, right.
You're not going to get anyone to show up for that.
That's right.
but maybe a church would host a game dinner some night during, you know, after it gets dark and the hunters come out of the woods, and you sort of celebrate that local culture. Or, you know, here in Vermont, everyone knows it's maple syrup.
Yes. Right? I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big deal, part of our local economy. Almost every family in my church, whether they do it industrially or just sort of at home for fun for their family, like people are tapping trees and making syrup in March, February, even into April a little bit. And so those are not the times to be doing big discipleship initiatives. But one of the things that I did after I first got here was the church didn't really do anything to celebrate that. And so finally, like after maple season kind of winds down and people are getting cleaned up in late April, I said, why don't we have, you know, Sundays where we showcase what we can do with maple? And so we started doing these maple themed coffee hours.
That's fun.
And we started having people from the community showing up and saying, hey, I keep hearing about what you're doing with maple. And we had a number of people end up connecting with church just through that. Mm-hmm. And so celebrating the local culture, but like you're saying too, you know, looking at the local businesses, what's going on here and how can we partner with those? This has been another big hallmark of my ministry, is just, you know, looking to see what's there and who's there, building relationships with those people. Right now, what we're doing, my church is in the midst of this big discipleship series on faith and the arts, which is a real stretch for small town people. So I'm going at it. But right now we're planning a big art event. We have a local art gallery that showcases folk art from the region. It's a beautiful venue. And I'm also talking with the local vintner at our winery to come and do a wine tasting at the art venue, and a local farm that makes several different types of goat cheese. I'm bringing all of these businesses together where each one of the businesses talks about their products. So we do a wine tasting, a cheese tasting, looking at visual folk art. And then I'm going to come and talk about the theology behind each of those three different art forms. Everyone wins. And most of these people are not believers, by the way. And so I think to invite them into our space, into our life, and just sort of leverage what they do, we're really interested in the winemaking. We're really interested in the cheese. We're really interested in the painting. Teach us about that.
Yes.
And then what I find is they're very interested to hear, you mean there's theology behind winemaking? And I say, oh, yes, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And so it's an amazing opportunity, not only to do discipleship with the church folk, but to build relationships, do outreach, missional living with local business and the people who own those and work at those.
The cool thing is, if you've already been putting in the effort to build relationships with your local community, with your neighbors, with the people that live next to you, which could be 5 miles away, could be whatever. It doesn't, you know, neighbor looks different depending on where you are. But if you've already been putting in the work to build relationships, like we've got a family out here that is tapping trees. But if you know anything about cooking down maple syrup, it's a lot of work to haul all of the sap that's been collected and dump it into the thing that's cooking it all down. And so there's a lot of opportunity to actually lean in. If you've done the work to build relationships, you could show up to actually help with some of those things, to lean in on some of those things. Or like, you know, hunting season, if you've got buddies that are going out hunting, you can go with. So I even just think about, if you're thinking about what do people value, what do they do for fun? What are the work seasons? Are there ways to lean in relationally in all those things? Which actually brings me to my next question. If I'm trying to build relationships with people in a small town, depending on what small town looks like, you don't necessarily have a next door neighbor per se. You might if you're living kind of in town, but where do people gather? Can you talk about, if you're wanting to build relationship with the community, if you're wanting to invest in the community in a small town, where are people? Where do they gather?
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, great question. And again, depending on the small town, so this might be a little bit different from town to town. So you just need to ask questions. That's always my best advice to people as they move into a small town community. to live on mission is just ask questions. And, you know, what do you value? Where do you gather? In my experience, in most small towns, the local elementary school is the hub of the community. It is where it typically employs the most people, with teachers and staff. It's where all the children show up every day. And so I think, you know, for mission, if you can tap into that local elementary school, some small towns will even have a high school, but usually in small towns there's sort of a regional high school that sort of gathers students from a lot of individual small towns. But the school is really the central hub. And so I remember when I first arrived in Franklin, Vermont, I was already starting to think and pray, how can I get involved in the local school? And then lo and behold, the second week I was there, I was at the post office and some woman approached me and she said, "Hey, I hear that you ski." And I said, "Who are you, number one?" And but somehow word travels fast. That's another thing about a small town. If you think you're going to try to hide any secrets, good luck with that. But anyway, she had heard somehow through the grapevine that I like to ski, and she invited me. She said, "Well, I coordinate the ski program at the elementary school. We're always looking for chaperones. Would you be willing to jump in?" And I said, "Wait a second. You're asking me, the new pastor in the community, if I'd be willing to partner with the local elementary school and ski with students, staff, faculty, and parents for free?" That was like the lowest hanging fruit I've ever had in ministry. Win, win, win. And so I've been doing that for the last 20 years, which has just given me incredible access to the school and to ministry opportunities. Also, like in our town, again, the general store is where you can walk in any morning of the week, and there are the retired guys sipping their coffee, talking politics and sports and hunting. And so I can walk in there and tap into some of the men in the community. A lot of local libraries are, you know, with story hours, programs for kids. Those are very important institutions in the community. Yeah, and then sometimes if there are local businesses that are, you know, I think those are always gathering places, depending on what type of business it is, but deeply valued because they support the local economy. Mm-hmm. So you can walk into most small towns and sort of identify a handful of these institutions. For ministry purposes, I'm always looking, how can I get involved in that? How can I be a part of this?
That's great. Yeah.
Volunteer fire departments. You know, I was surprised when I first showed up in town. I thought I was going to become a fireman because that's how to tap into the men. But this little town had its own volunteer ambulance service. And they said, "Well, you know, if you want to join the fire department, that would be great. But we really need help with our emergency medical service. Would you be willing to drive an ambulance?" And I thought, well, that's something I never thought about before. But I did the EMT training and drove the ambulance for a number of years. Another great way to tap into the community.
So you're in Vermont, a super unchurched, post-Christian part of the country. What does it look like for you to lean into having spiritual conversations with people in a way that's not weird? I feel like people sniff out weird super quickly.
Oh, yes.
So how do you explore who might be spiritually curious? What does engaging in spiritual conversation in a super unchurched post-Christian context look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and you've already hit on it. So you have to look for natural avenues, because if there's anything fake or inauthentic or gimmicky, it not only is it going to fail, but it's going to decrease your credibility in the community. And so I think any of those sort of mechanisms that I've seen used in other places are, they're like cardinal sins and just damaging to the reputation of the church. We have found so much success in simply inviting people into our home for dinner. I just don't think there's any substitute for doing this. And it's probably a plus that I'd like to cook and I like to host. And so not everybody enjoys that, or they get anxious about it. For whatever reason, this is one of the things I like to do. But my wife and I, and she's a teacher at the local public school, again, immense access. She's the music teacher. She knows every family in the community. And so that's helpful. But again, not just having folks from our church over for dinner, for fellowship, like that's good. Nothing wrong with that. But actually what we're most interested in is just inviting people from the community over. And what I find is just sort of, to use the metaphor, set the table and then they partake of themselves. I don't have to do a whole lot of work to engage those conversations. They sort of happen naturally once you set the stage for it.
People know when they're being cared for genuinely.
Yeah.
And when you're interested in their life genuinely.
You know, you cook them a meal. That's a labor of love. And, you know, you go take the time to invite them in. And yeah, you got it.
Last question, Jason. Let's say a family is kind of just getting started. They have their eyes towards living missionally. Jesus has really captured their heart, their attention. Yeah. And they're really wanting to be good news people in their small town community. How would you coach them? Where would you encourage them to start?
Yeah, I would encourage them to, number one, don't come in with preconceived notions or expectations, because it's going to be different from wherever else you came from. And if you expect people to invite you in, you're probably going to be disappointed. I think to not have expectations, but be willing to take the initiative is the very first starting place. After that, I think to really, you know, some of the things we've already talked about of where do people gather? How do people build relationships? How can I just simply get involved is a good one. And with the goal of doing good work, benefiting the community, helping people to flourish. And not, it's hard to say it because we do want to be gospel focused, but that shouldn't necessarily be the only reason why we do things either. And so what I find is I've tried to actually not have the gospel as my number one primary goal, but it almost always leads to it at some point. There's something to that. I wish I could articulate it more clearly. I've thought about it a lot, and I still don't know if I fully understand that dynamic. But I think actually just loving people and caring for them as the front door, and then maybe eventually get to the gospel.
Having been raised in a small town farming and factory town in the Midwest myself, and then ministering in that small town for several years as an adult, I sure affirm what Jason has said today about small town dynamics and about how to be on mission in a small town. And so our thanks to Jason McConnell for joining us on this episode of the Everyday Mission Podcast. Well, whether you're on mission in a big city, small town, or somewhere in between, we here at 3DM have just added several free resources on our website that we know will help you. Just go to 3dmovements.com and click on Resources. There, you'll find a page full of free, downloadable resources designed to help you help others explore Jesus, help you lead a small group like a house church or a micro church or a missional community. And there's even a section with helpful resources for those of you who are church leaders. Again, just go to 3dmovements.com, click resources, and download away. Well, coming up on the next episode of the Everyday Mission Podcast, we'll hear one person's story of what it looks like for him, his family, and several other families that joined him in intentionally living incarnational lives in the roughest section of an already rough city. Jesse Harden will be here. He'll join us to tell the story of what happened when he sensed God calling him to leave his traditional church ministry position, move to an area of town referred to by many as the war zone, and live and minister there with his wife and kids. And what a story he has to tell. That's coming up next time on the Everyday Mission Podcast. For Gina Mueller, I'm Mike Potter. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. And until next time, may you listen to the Lord and follow him as he leads you on mission.